Great. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the ADD Guidebook by E.J. Gold. It's Wednesday night. It's about 7 o'clock. And we're at the last part of the ADD Guidebook. And we're in the midst of an experiment that's turning out to be quite interesting. But before I explain the experiment, I'm going to indicate what the next book is, because we probably have two or three more weeks left, which, if you place your orders today, you would have your book called Invocation of Presence by that time, right, Ivan?
I hope so.
No.
Yes, of course they can get the book by that time.
Well, that's what we want, is determination. Ivan, and are we on over there? Can we look? Can I see the screen? Do they see the book?
Yeah, they see.
Okay. Ivan, if somebody wants to order it, exactly what they need to do and how much does it cost?
Well, the book is $35 plus shipping, so that's basically, you'll say $40, and then in California there would be some sales tax. So you can get it, I'm pretty sure you can get it using PayPal on the website, or you could call up here and talk to Yunesh or Jewel to order it, or you send us an email.
Send me an email as well.
Yeah.
When I went on the website, if you go on Gateway, was it on Gateway Books and Tapes?
I have to check. I thought it was.
Oh.
It'll be under private editions. It should be a section that's called something like private editions.
This is a fundamental book in regards to the work we do here, and in specific, it is a companion volume really to practical work on self, and it gives the overall sense of where we want to get to in that book. And what I was going to say earlier is, and the reason I'm so excited about this book, is that when we went through practical work on self, one of the chapters is called Sensing. Do you remember do you have that nearby, George? Can you look that chapter number up for me, please?
Absolutely.
Thank you. And that...
Sensing is chapter 12. Through sensing, we can follow the momentary concentration of forces in our organisms where inner tensions of forces occur, when they shift, and at what tempo.
Thank you. So as we go through practical work on self and many of the exercises we do within this pantheon of offerings, we have to have a tool called the sensing mechanism. And when we were going through practical work on self, I did that class on the Sundays for about a year.
A while, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And that was mostly, many of the people that came were the Spaniards. And that was the most difficult thing to explain.
Yes, it is.
So part of the purpose of this class, when we do Invocation of Presence, is to come up with a simple ability to communicate the concept of sensing. That is a fun experiment. What do you think, George? Think we can do it?
I think we can.
Excellent. And in the meantime, where we are is we're at the last part, the final part of the ABD guidebook. And this part is called the sermon. And when we were trying to decide, well, how am I going to do this? How am I going to work with the sermons? It came to me that what would be a great idea is that individuals would take on the role of being the pastor, the priest, and would deliver to the congregation their particular sermon. So, and if you think about that, you're goal is to communicate meaning to the congregants, right? So that's a different role than you usually are in. And in addition to that, then the congregant's job is not to think, but to absorb the presence of the individual pastor that will be visiting with us during the night tonight. And so All that, Pat's got an additional word.
More than one. So when we started this journey, and I'm going to just take us back a ways now, what is it, 70 weeks, give
About
or take?
60.
62
yeah.
weeks when we began this particular journey with this text, we used the analogy of a scouting group that would go out on the trail ahead of the larger expedition and sort of scout around and see what was out there and then come back and share that with the group so we would all proceed together. And we used that analogy for quite a while with our work with some of this material. And it has a variation when we get to this particular special place in the book, which is called the Sermons. And I'm going to step aside from our text for just a moment and ask you to recall that in this particular venue, sometimes there is song. And the difference between song and the spoken word is something we'll investigate more in Invocation of Presence because it comes immediately there.
Correct.
But
yeah.
in this venue, if you think about the work that was done that created the Angel Songbook and those other texts that we have that are written down music and words, those came from the experience of folks who were out in group. They were either tree planting or gold panning. And those two events put them aside out from the major group, off on their own, doing that little scouting thing. And there was always a person in that particular gathering, or two or three, that would come together at the end of the day and all the food and the eating and all that was done and make sure the campfire was ready and there would be singing. So the group gathered. Now, in the Sunday morning sermon style, the gathering of the group is a different configuration, and it's not with song, but it's still the same. You're still using the ear. You're still using the listening. You're participating in that form,
mm-hmm.
not in the reading. So we're not reading text here. We're in the congregational part where we receive the word by ear.
And
that's where we are.
And we recall, to go back now 2 years to even the original ABD, which was styled in part after the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and the so-called Tibetan Book of the Dead, its proper title is Great Liberation Through Hearing in the Bardos. So as voyagers, we need to learn how to listen and to be able to absorb what the pastor is giving to us. And we're going to be able to start tonight. We're going to take a try of that. And I'd like to start with, before we start, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear them on the phone at all? Can you hear what they're saying? Can you hear it over there? Can you hear the guys on the phone? Pretty good? Okay. Okay, good. Then we're set. So I'd like to start with Sermon 16
mm-hmm.
and Grant. Is that okay for you?
Sermon 16 sounds just right. I'm going to...
Make sure you stay near your mic when you're presenting it.
Okay.
There you go. That's a little bit better.
Okay, good.
That's good.
I will locate Sermon 16 here, and then we will get started. I hope before we start that everybody can just take a nice deep breath and relax and settle into their seats and keep a nice, relaxed, and clear attention. Just,
okay.
You know, we, as congregants, we're going to be receiving, so we'll just try to kind of clear our minds a little bit of any tension for the day, et cetera, so we just bring a nice, clean, clear awareness in. And so we'll start with the 16th Sunday sermon. And number 16 starts, to guide the spirit through the stages of sickness, dying, death, and rebirth, with the certainty of the unchanged survival of the spirit requires of you, the practitioner, that you are continually aware of the great truth of spiritual existence and the reality of the void. And I'd like to just give you that again, because I don't think I got the intonation correct on it. 16. To guide the spirit through the stages of sickness, dying, death, and rebirth, with the certainty of the unchanged survival of the spirit, requires of you, the practitioner, that you are continually aware of the great truth of spiritual existence and the reality of the void. Human beings with bodies and minds are no more material when they take actions such as eating, drinking, sleeping, talking, walking, running, enjoying themselves, or enduring hardships and suffering than they are when they rest in the peaceful state of beingness in pure spirit. Matter and the human ego cannot be taken as separate entities. They are one and the same thing. They are both manifestations of spirit, but seeming to be possessed of a reality which is different than that of spirit. To believe for a moment that a spiritual being has even for a moment somehow become compressed into the skull of the body or enters and leaves the body is a further entrapment of the being. To believe that spirit can become trapped inside a material body is to deny the truth of spiritual existence and to give to the body a greater power and reality than the spirit. Belief that the spirit enters the material body at all prevents the being from realizing the nature of reality of existence and becoming liberated. It brings about a desire to escape from something in which one was never trapped. There's no better trap than the imaginary trap to hold a spiritual being locked in. The practitioner should explain to the individual the absolute control that the spirit has and can cause upon the material world, and that disease, dying, and death are only made real by the fears and wrong beliefs about the nature of existence. Show how recognition of the nature of reality dispels fears and confusion. Bring the individual to the realization that he is not a helpless victim at the mercy of a material world, but the very cause of the existence and power of the world, that he is the spirit itself. And that ends the 16th sermon.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Grant.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're welcome.
David, you were talking earlier about sensing, and I think Grant just gave us a good example of it when he began, and then, to my surprise, said, I would like to do that over because I don't think I put the emphasis where it belonged. And
it did,
in fact, sound different. So he was sensing and was able to make a mid-flight correction right on the spot.
Well put. Nicely put.
Mid-flight correction.
Yeah.
Like a bird that is tacking and lifts its wings.
And we don't need to I'm silenced in a sense by this particular reading and by the pastor's delivery, and I think that's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. And if we're ready.
Oh, we're ready.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I think I'd like to move to sermon number 12 by George.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay.
The 12th Sunday sermon. Because of alterations in the state of the mind or body, the spirit can become convinced of the reality of the condition, thus demonstrating that only through belief in the reality of the material world can the spirit be controlled by it and made to feel pain and suffering. Sudden changes in the state of a body or a mind have been known to cause instant death without any apparent cause. These can be minor upsets, shock, grief, or unexpected events, which cause the spiritual being to withdraw suddenly from the body. Thus, it can be demonstrated that a body and mind in the material world are kept alive only because a spiritual being wills it to be alive. That is, the body and mind are alive because the being says they are. Sometimes, a complete recovery, even from death, can be effected by this simple recognition. And the practitioner should apply it in all cases where there is no hope of recovery or where it seems appropriate. Both organic and pathological diseases can be affected by this recognition, and in fact are more likely to be cleared up when this is applied than when material medicine is given. The important change is in the spiritual state of the individual rather than the physical state, as the spiritual state is far senior to the physical condition and is controlling the condition whether the being is aware of that or not. The cause of disease and the fear of death are the beliefs that the being is helplessly powerless to control the effects of existence because matter is senior to spirit and that the mind is capable of thought and of independent action. When these, and I will insert the word false when these false beliefs have been overcome, the spirit will once again, as it did before contamination with the material world, control the effects of existence, control the effects that existence has on the material body and mind. Innate belief without question in the material causes of disease and death have created for the individual the condition of being powerless to cease creating disease and death, or to recognize death as the simple transition from one apparency of form to another that it is. Thus ends the reading of the 12th Sunday sermon.
That was really special, Silverdale. I'm surprised your delivery of the basis of the ideology of Christian Science, which for me is very, very, very sophisticated stuff. Your delivery made it so I could actually follow the line of thought. And this is very complex stuff to me. And I was able to really go where you were sending us with your delivery. The thoughts went enough at a pace that I could follow. I so appreciate the way you did that. Thank you. It's a huge to hear somebody read it instead of me trying to figure it out.
Look, if I could just introduce a profane element into the evening's discussion. I can't imagine that anyone here has watched Trump on television, but you know, when he reads that teleprompter, when he initially read the teleprompter, it was very halting and so on. And with practice, of course, he becomes more fluent. Obama is very fluent with the teleprompter. Anyway, my point is simply this. I tried not to read this. I tried to imagine that I was thinking of it with the immediacy of the present moment, and it was those fresh thoughts out of my mind that I was trying to communicate to the people there in front of me, to the other beings there in front of me. So thank you for that compliment, Pat.
Thank you. You succeeded, and it's so necessary to a successful delivery, like we're talking about here, to actually do that, to have the consideration of who's hearing you and how they're listening as part of how you do it. Whereas when we do those delivering of instructions in the readings, it's not in the same modality.
No.
It's the same information, but it's in a different modality, and we're getting some experience here with difference in them and the quality of them, and I'm so grateful for your pacing that made it
possible. And just one other ingredient that I've learned along the way in this fourth way teaching. Our voice can be, I'll just say, used in three different octaves. Most of us talk in, let's say, the lowest octave, which is just ordinary conversation, and it's just so much pitter patter as we kind of lubricate our way through life. There's a, and I'm only repeating what I read from EJ, actually. And then there might be a second level of intonation in which we voluntarily allow our being, you know, the development of our beingness and our spirit and our presence to speak through us as though through a radio. And then, of course, what EJ makes the point is that if we're able to actually deepen our intonation to that third octave, it's actually our spirit addressing material reality to effect specific change. And actually that's referred to, you know, in this chapter,
in this particular sermon.
That's right.
That's a decision.
Yeah, just if our spirit word suddenly departs the body, the practitioner should be able, through the intonation of the voice of the being, his own being alone, bring that being back into the physical body for life.
And that's what he was discussing in the sermon.
Right.
And I want to point out a couple of things. One is that the how different the two pastors have been so far.
Yeah.
And it's just like a different song was sung by, it's a different flavor, a different song was sung by each of them. And this time when I was listening to George, I thought I could see the pastor writing the sermon.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the sitting alone at his desk writing the sermon that we are now getting.
You know,
and go ahead, George.
That wasn't me. That was somebody else.
I was going to add something, but go ahead and finish, David.
Well, no, it's just that I have a whole other thing, which I'll get into later, though. Okay.
Well,
go ahead, Greg.
If I can just say, I had two impressions. One was that just that impression that you had, that he's sitting at the desk creating the sermon right there. And the other was, at one point, I thought, oh, my God, it's 1938, and I am huddled in front of a radio, and I am listening to some very important instructions coming through this radio, and the announcer is really clearly getting this instruction through. And, you know, I think the telephone connection makes it also a little different that way, perhaps. I don't know. But it was just very strong, like, wow, excellent delivery, you know, in that way. So I just wanted to convey that.
This is a very important comment. And as if we read through the ABD or in the instructions there here in the ABD guidebook, the reader, practitioner, is giving an instruction to the voyager. Well, we have to practice receiving instruction, too. And that's what Grant is saying, that he got that he was getting the message. So that's where sensing comes in, is what did it feel like when you were just open enough? And it's this, what I call active surrender, that comes to bear in a case like this. So very, very interesting. Shall we?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Would you like
about
to do the next one, number
and can
7?
Can I have him sit here because this is all set
okay.
up?
Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
No,
that's
let's
okay,
have him
Ivan.
Sit here. Yes. Because this mic is set up and then he's turning up his radio, so it's
Yes.
Lower. Way over there. Yeah, that way. More. No. Towards him.
It should be right in
this
front
way.
Of his, yeah. Right like that.
So, and then you can go this way. See, you're
going
to be speaking this way.
There you go.
And then you've got this right under your mouth.
Okay.
Batty knows.
Yep.
Batty knows. Seventh Sunday sermon. As you learn more about the real medicine of the spirit, and the process of liberation of the being from the material world, you will see that humanity as a whole must eventually alter its basis of existence from sensation and fear to pure knowledge, and from confusion to truth, from matter to spirit. Humanity believes itself to have been placed within the material world without his consent or knowledge. And he believes that he will be just as suddenly and unknowingly removed from it, as helplessly and involuntarily as he entered it, without knowing when or why it will happen. In the same way as a child becomes frightened of the dark, so humanity in its spiritual ignorance sees fearful things everywhere but within its own thought forms. and seeks refuge from them everywhere but in the only real peace and safety, the essence of spirit. Thus, humanity is in slavery to its own beliefs and can no more comprehend its own spiritual nature than a dog can fly a stagecoach. Humanity must be taken out of spiritual darkness and led by the hand through the morass of confusion it has made for itself. Humanity must be led out of spiritual darkness, then, by those who know the light of spirit, before each individual can rid himself of the suffering brought about by long exposure to the world of matter. It is as if humanity had been lost in a deep, deep cave for a very long time, and it is just now finding its way out of there. Humanity's ignorance of spirits and beliefs in the material world must be overcome enough that it can realize that it has depended upon pleasant and comfortable ways which lead nowhere. Man must come to understand that the only way out is to go out, not to remain within. Man must come to recognize that he has been resisting the end of his suffering. He must leave the cave and come out into the light, and not just say he is going to do it someday. That's the end of the seventh sermon.
Wow. Wow.
I guess my comment is that it's interesting to sense how I differently received the different sermons. I received the sensing of it very strongly, you know, in my third eye.
He's referring to God. They don't see him.
Oh, that's right.
When you say you.
Okay. And whereas I related to what Patty said about George's delivery, the phrasing of it was extremely clear for my understanding. But Doug's was interesting because of how I received it, the sensing of it. I was listening to it, but I was sensing it so strongly there.
There were so many images.
Oh.
John.
Okay. I guess what I was thinking in relationship to Marvette's comment is that there were so many images in this, you know, dogs flying stage coaches and, you know, fearful shadows and cave. I mean, it was very visual. So that seemed to affect the way it was being processed for me compared to Grant's, which seemed so etheric in a way. Yeah.
There was more emotional content here. And that's how it impacted me.
Okay.
It's almost like you can't get away with it.
Well, yeah, and I think for this particular reading, for some reason it was so pragmatic. It just seemed so like simple little bites of information that I was getting. The word flourishes so much as just direct communication, which made it more potent in a certain way,
yeah.
You know, the simplicity.
Yeah, that's what struck me about it, is the directness of that sermon and that,
and
you know,
delivery, yeah.
Yeah, the delivery also. But yeah, I seem to feel it more in the solar plexus.
And David, in many ways, we're actually affirming your stated experiment in going through this process, which is we're perceiving each sermon in, I would say, something like in accordance with the way that it, according, the words of that I think of is according to type. So depending upon what type you are, you might actually be more touched by one reading versus another type of a reading, just because, you know, you like apple juice and not orange juice or something like that.
Well, we have, I think part of it is just the very practice of attempting to be, the practice of attempting to receive information as a voyager. And I think that's what it felt like when Tamara was speaking, is that that's, you know, I was swept away by the vision of it, and I was swept away by getting instruction. I'm going to say something I said I was going to get into a minute ago, but it's, I realized, and we'll dig it out a little bit, I realized that I didn't believe this was for me. I didn't think it was possible for me, the instruction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, I like that idea, but I don't think it's for me. There was a disbelief as it related, could I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the corollary is that maybe I can, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like sitting there, it's like suddenly I felt maybe I can, oh, but not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I'm saying is that I need to just allow it to come in.
That is the most difficult part when you sit at the other side of the delivery, is to allow it to be received in spite of what you might think of it. So, you know, a sermon is about something that actually is true.
Correct.
And it's personal. And it's immediate. And that is so hard to accept.
And that's,
it's so hard to accept
that
as being
true.
We're not in control.
Doug is saying we're not in control. And that's what I'm saying is that I could feel it blocking.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming in a
Yeah.
Now, when George was pronouncing his sermon, I felt almost like it was a type of medicine, that it was clearing certain beliefs.
Yeah.
So it was a clear, you know, clearing. So.
Yeah. Hey, on Laura 34. You seen her? No. But I wanted to emphasize something that Pat said about receiving the readings. When we were doing the Red ABD, we had an exercise of people calling each other up and giving and receiving
mm-hmm.
readings. And I did that with Kay a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different form of medicine that you receive.
Yeah, you take it.
When
yeah.
you take the long drink and allow yourself to do that. And that's, and so we have the opportunity to do that here. And before we move on, just one more quick question. It's pretty obvious we're not going 1 to 18.
Oh,
and pretty much the
good.
Sermons are just simply, that's the next one, okay?
Yeah.
So we're not using a linear guide here, but something
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
And
so seems to be working. Seems to me to be working.
It certainly does. It really does for me.
And would you mind if we heard 18 before 10?
Well, I was going to,
we have
the room for both.
We
and
do.
What do you think about that?
I'd rather 18 before 10 rather than 10 before 18. Here you go.
Here, come on.
Come on. This is the portable phone.
Okay, so we're going to, Harry, we're going to go to 18 first, okay?
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
A good
Thank you,
choice.
Harry.
Now,
of course.
I'm right in front of you.
Oh. Are you? Yeah.
Uncomfortably close.
Yeah.
You have to look at the phone.
Let's just take this second.
Oh, dear. Pat my head. Rub my stomach.
There you go. Good, Ivan. Thank you.
My shoulder's in the way.
So you're going to kind of face slightly this way, but of course that's what you've got to face.
Okay.
And then, and can you hold this in your hand while you're doing that? And tap your foot. Very good. You're almost ready.
The 18th Sunday sermon. It seems as if man has descended from the infinite into the finite. But in fact, man is still infinite, and only the consciousness has appeared to change. Man's awareness has become for him his consciousness, even though awareness and consciousness are completely different from each other. Man has restricted his consciousness to smaller and smaller limitations. It began by limiting the awareness to eternity and then to infinity. Thus, the being seemed to have the life of a creator. Then, the consciousness was limited still further to the consciousness of space and time, and so he became the expander of creation, and still further was the awareness of consciousness limited, until the being became the caretaker of space, then of solar systems, then of suns, of worlds, and finally, the awareness was limited to the human consciousness, in which man has no direct contact with his full spiritual experience, and therefore must depend upon the mind and the memory for his thoughts and actions. As long as man has a consciousness limited to mind and the memory, he cannot know anything at all about the existence or significance of the spiritual consciousness and its immanent nature of knowledge and experience. Through the limitations imposed upon man by the human intellect composed of mind and memory, man remains unable to comprehend his situation. And the way out of it, which is so simple when viewed with spiritual consciousness, until he is bound up by his understanding and held fast by his beliefs. But in fact, his beliefs would crumble at the merest glimpse of truth, the full awareness of every event that has ever taken place anywhere, which is the knowledge and state of spiritual consciousness, for which there is only omnipresent knowledge of all things. It is a very small distance from the limitation of human consciousness to the expansion and infinite eternity of spiritual consciousness. But it takes a very big bridge for man to make his way across that tiny gap. In spiritual consciousness, there is a direct knowledge of the surrounding life of the universe, the connection of life to the environment, and the realization of the immanence of spiritual consciousness which permeates everything. Man's biggest concern is how he is going to carry on if his limited consciousness gives way to unlimited consciousness of the spirit. What will become of him? Will he be able to remain in his body? Will he have to die if his consciousness becomes infinite? All the teachers and gurus who have come as messengers to this world have told man that rather than being the beginning of suffering, as he seems to believe with his limited mind, It is the end of his suffering. But how can he be sure that they are not lying to him? Spiritual consciousness is not the kind of thing that one can see when limited by human consciousness of mind and memory. For within man's mind, there is no comprehension of the meaning and scope of spiritual consciousness. And within his memory, there is no recollection of having had any such consciousness. For the human memory does not store such things within it. And so man does not know, nor can he ever know, with his limited human consciousness, whether it is the truth or not. That spiritual consciousness is the end of suffering and pain. He has been betrayed so many times before, and he has memory of his betrayals. But he does not recognize those memories as products of the human consciousness itself. And so the human consciousness is protected from dissolution by the memory that it creates for the individual. And how is the individual to know whether or not the memory is real? For if he tries to remember whether or not those incidents of betrayal are real, he must be dependent upon the memory to supply him with the details of the incidents. So man is in a trap of his own making, and which is all the more strong because it is so close to the reality that he is, in fact, spiritual consciousness, that he cannot see his way out of it. The threads of the trap are so gossamer and slender that they have become invisible and hold him all the more. How is man to get out of this trap of limited consciousness if he cannot see the trap? Now, become free of it without recognizing the fact of human consciousness. Since man cannot recognize or even realize the existence of spiritual consciousness from the limitations of human consciousness, how can he even decide to free himself? Just as in any other form of nature, the forms of consciousness are cyclic. And so there are periods when the spiritual consciousness becomes slightly predominant over the limited human consciousness. And so he should at that time take advantage of the situation to cultivate the spiritual consciousness. He can do this by coming into the teaching. And if his spiritual consciousness fully predominates his human limited consciousness, then he may become a renunciate. Now, a human consciousness, because it is limited, would never become a renunciate because it does not see the greater view of existence, but only its limited form of existence within that incarnation. The spiritual consciousness, when it has become opened, is aware of the whole of eternal, infinite existence and its part in that great creation, and so naturally declares itself as the renunciate of limited consciousness. For that is its real nature. For none of the accumulations of limited consciousness have any reality for it other than as variations of the infinite forms of spiritual consciousness, which have become self-limited in their own subjective awareness. And so, it is as simple as that. The reason that the individual who is suffering from limited human consciousness does not wish to commit himself to a life of renunciation is only because he sees. Let me give you that again. And so it is as simple as that. The reason that the individual who is suffering from limited human consciousness does not wish to commit himself to a life of renunciation is because he sees only the single incarnation and reality of that lifetime. And therefore, he simply does not have the time to waste on a spiritual life. And since he has only so much existence that he can be aware of, he has just that much time to enjoy his existence and to accumulate the things he would like to have. So he becomes aggressive and his passions rise, since they must be formed compactly and be compressed in a single lifetime. But he who has spiritual consciousness does not accumulate things because he will eventually have everything. And he does not become aggressive because he can wait for all things to come to him. And his passions are not strong because he has all of infinite eternity to express his unlimited emotions. And he is a renunciant by nature, not by decision. Because he has the infinite time to be and to experience. Above all, the sign of the being of spiritual consciousness is that he is not in a hurry, does not rush to accomplish his aims, and is not anxious to live life all in a rush of impatient anxiety, as if he were about to see his life foreclosed and all his potentials destroyed forever. Yes, the being of spiritual consciousness is above all content to allow events to proceed at their own pace. He is the oldest, grown wise with age and experience. That concludes the sermon 18.
Wow.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. That was a model of clarity.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were listening to a wonderful storyteller, and she just took us right through it and right to the end, and it's so beautiful.
Just hooked us completely.
That sermon seemed to communicate quite a number of emotions.
Yeah.
And I think you communicated them very well. They came through.
It's such a powerful sermon for me because it addresses issues that I've had, you know, issues of suffering, issues of anxiety about how to become a renunciate, you know, what to do, how to be. And that kind of anxiety, am I making progress on the path? I mean, it just, I don't know, I felt like just such an open space when I first read it. And and there's a way, particularly at the beginning, when it talks about the limitations,
mm-hmm.
that seem to link for me back into the map, which is at the beginning of the book. So it became this kind of spiraling thing, but it's a really good sermon.
That it is.
And by
like
the way,
journey,
I'd like to just...
Feels like a journey, that sermon.
Yeah, and I'd like to just observe the counterpoint of having three men read sermons, Grant, myself, and Harry, and the tonality of the female voice, which I'm sure, Tamara, you take completely for granted, but which actually has an effect on me as a man, let's say, but also the way you communicated it. It really sounded like a song of a muse.
it had a touch of victory to it somehow, of success, of fulfillment that I didn't realize was there.
Yes, I understand that there is this beckoning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sort of like the seven veils dance. But
mm-hmm.
after reading it aloud a couple times this week, I thought, oh, now this would be a good sermon to have somebody deliver at my transition.
Well,
you know, so
you should add that to that sheet that we got.
The five wishes. You know.
Yeah. Were you part of the? When did we do the? Remember we wrote up how you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You were part. I thought there's one up there for you, Susan.
I'm gonna add something about the process we're in the middle of, which is we sit in congregation and we sit both as a recipient and deliverer.
Yeah.
And you know, usually I sit over where you're sitting right now, so I hear it differently, even though today I haven't been delivering any of the sermons. Still, my posture, my attitude when sitting up there is different than when sitting back here. I got very weepy back here, you know, just let myself go very far into the places where that can lead, which I would probably not do on camera. So it's another part of this, where are we sitting in relation to hearing it or delivering it? Just, you know, a side comment just from personal experience today.
You all can't see, but when I was delivering it, Patricia was directly in my line of vision.
Right.
And at one point in reading it, of course, it's wonderful to read to her because she is the chamber. But I had a sense of like looking at her, and she became a series of hallways.
Hmm.
I don't know how to describe it, but it was an interesting. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, this was extraordinary.
Yeah.
This is a great idea. This experiment is a great idea.
Harry, is it okay?
Yeah,
is
I
it
was
okay
going to suggest. Let's
do yours next week.
Oh, absolutely. Besides,
Thank
I
you.
Don't want to be in a hurry right now.
Correct. Yeah. And I think it's fine to just allow it to unfold as it does, which is what's occurring. And Pat had the feeling of changing the order and doing 18 next. That was the right idea. It was exactly
I had a bishop once tell me, he says, Harry, don't milk the cow and then kick the pail over.
Good.
He says,
that's a good renunciation.
There's a time to wait. Very spiritual. Yeah, he was that, I guess, at times.
So let yourself be awash in receiving the words of the pastor, and then several of us stand in the position of the posture, which will help us receive from the pastor as well. And I think that what we'll do is we'll take it up again next week, on Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Wonderful.
Thank you for coming. Good night.
Thanks for hosting us.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
You're welcome.